to the Upcycle Canada podcast. I'm Jennifer, and together with my husband Dave, we started with an idea, worked on it as a side hustle, and grew it into our first eco-friendly store. At Upcycle Canada, we repurpose, refinish, and reuse discarded items, giving them new life. Sit in on the conversation as we continue to grow from a small side hustle into something much more. Special guests will drop by and share their journey with you as well. This is the most eco-friendly small business podcast in your favorites. This is Upcycle Canada, where yesterday's items are reborn. Let's do this.
Okay, everyone, welcome to the Upcycle Canada podcast. And I've brought in a new friend from our American neighbors to the south of where I am, but in a city that I love and I want to go back to very soon. Rebecca is here today to talk about her background, and she brings a lot of knowledge and expertise to the topic of environmental studies and being environmentally friendly, everything that we're all about here on Upcycle Canada. And so, Rebecca, welcome to the podcast. So glad to have you here.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Excellent. I've been watching your stuff on YouTube, speaking and guesting on other shows, and interested to have you on the show. Can you let everybody know where you are in this great big world of ours and a little bit about your background as well as we start off?
Sure. So I am in Astoria, which is a neighborhood in Queens, New York. Queens is one of the five boroughs of New York City. It is across the East River from Manhattan. And I am a law professor. I teach at CUNY School of Law, which is the City University's public law school here in New York City. And our mission is to produce lawyers who will work in the public's interest. So all of our graduates go on to work in public interest law in one form or another. And my specialty is environmental law and environmental justice.
Environmental justice too. Like, I'm thinking, okay, there's a lot to unpack here. Okay, so for us who are not in that space, can you please expand on that a little bit more? Give us more about what all that entails, because I'm sure there's a lot to cover in there.
Well, sure. So I teach classes, obviously, and then as a scholar, I write for both a scholarly audience and for a popular audience about issues of environmental law and environmental justice. And what environmental justice means is the fair treatment and meaningful involvement of all people in environmental decisions that affect them. So it has a substantive component about making sure that we don't create sacrifice zones, neighborhoods that are overburdened with polluting infrastructure and noise and highways in order to benefit other neighborhoods. And usually there's a racialized dimension to which neighborhoods are burdened and which neighborhoods benefit. And then it also means that everybody's voice matters in making decisions about the environment.
Okay. So that's another interesting part, because when you have a condensed population in a very small area on top of each other, that creates its own world of issues with how we treat our environment and how we deal with our air, how where we live and all that, compared to maybe some spread out areas, middle of America, where you can't even see your neighbor. They're so far away. It brings a whole different aspect to being good with our environment. What are you seeing it where you live that's unique as far as how we can be better with our environmental footprint?
Well, one of the advantages of cities, I mean, there are definitely disadvantages, but one of the advantages is that when we are all so close together, there's a tremendous amount of efficiency. So in general, city dwellers have much smaller carbon footprints and ecological footprints than do more suburban dwellers in particular, but then also more rural dwellers. We're far less likely to use automobiles. Our heating and cooling is far more efficient usually. And we have much less access to green space, that is for sure. So that is always one of the challenges, is how to manage those things and how to balance them. Here in New York, both in New York State and in New York City, we are taking pretty significant steps to try to reduce the carbon footprints of our buildings, because in urban areas, buildings are the biggest source of carbon emissions and also of pollution. So we have, just for example, in New York City, we banned the use of number 6 fuel oil and are phasing out number 4 fuel oil. So all buildings have to use number 2, which burns much cleaner. So that reduces particulate emissions as well as carbon emissions. And both the city and the state just passed all electric laws. So all new buildings will have to be all electric and won't have any fossil fuel infrastructure at all. New York City also has a building retrofit law that is requiring existing buildings over a certain size to take steps to reduce their carbon emissions very significantly over the next 15 years, starting next year for the worst offenders and then phasing in for other buildings.
And as these things are phased in, because of the dense population, it's going to have a huge impact.
It will. This one law alone should reduce the U.S. carbon emissions by almost 2%. And of course, other cities are watching. So if we can do this in New York, that means that cities everywhere can do it. And I think we'll see this catch on and become a virtuous cycle of more and more rapid change. At least I hope so.
So from your perspective, what is standing in the way of making this happen sooner?
Money. The real estate lobby is doing everything they can to block it, to slow it down. And, you know, they lost the initial fight in making the laws, getting the laws enacted, but they've had a rear guard action. They challenged it in court and they lost. And now they have a new initiative to try to slow the rollout, to say, OK, we're going to do this, but this is too fast, even though, of course, they had almost a decade to plan, because these laws were passed in 2017. So, you know, we'll see. I think there's going to be a pitched battle over it.
Interesting. That is very interesting from my perspective as well. So my wife and I created our little side business called Upcycle Canada. And the idea behind it was we just wanted to do practical things and extend the life of products beyond their lifetime. So something no longer has value to somebody, they're just going to dispose of it. We want to salvage that item and give it an extended life to keep it out of the landfill.
And I love that.
That's the whole idea of what we're doing. And what's interesting is we have no shortage of donations. We have people giving us stuff all the time, calling us, can you come here, pick this up, do this. I'm just curious from your perspective, how do you feel us as a culture is leaning towards being more eco-friendly and more responsible with our environment? Do you see it getting better as you go out and speak and teach and lead people in this direction? Is it getting better? Are we making improvements?
We are. It's, it needs to be faster. But we are definitely making improvements. I mean, the number of places that have adopted plastic bag laws so that people now bring their own bags with them when they go shopping. That change alone dramatically reduces the amount of plastic waste going out into the world, and therefore the amount of petroleum we need to extract to make all that plastic that's going to be used once and then thrown away. So too with reusable water bottles, right? There's really a cultural shift there. Every school I go into has a refill your water bottle here and a count for how many plastic bottles this has avoided. Airports have that as well. Not everybody is doing it, but more and more people are. And many places no longer provide plastic straws automatically. Either they provide paper straws or no straws at all. I was just at the Bronx Zoo. They have changed to all compostable plates, cups, et cetera, silverware. And, these are small things, but they add up to a cultural change, which is a shift away from this idea of single use and disposal. It's a mentality. It's the mentality that affects the things that you're talking about that you work with as well. Whatever they are, they're valuable things in the world, but the solution when you don't want it anymore is to throw it away, as opposed to, first of all, before you acquire something, think about, do I actually want this? Do I need it? Could I borrow it from somebody else and return it to them? But that doesn't work so well with capitalism, where the bottom line is all about buying more and new.
Right. And I like when I think back to when I was young, growing up as a kid, and everything just kind of went out to the curb and the garbage truck took it away. We didn't sort anything. We didn't recycle. There was no bag limits. You could just throw it in the garbage. And I have this weird feeling when I see somebody take like a can or glass and just throw it in the garbage. I'm like, for me, my alarm bells go off. And I guess that's a good sign that we're thinking more about, hey, that's not waste. That could be recycled. Mm-hmm. So I like that. It's kind of becoming more normal for us to have that conversation. And we're getting away from just throwing everything away because it's convenient.
It is. And it really is. I think what you said initially is really important. This idea that you can throw it away, and that away is a place that things go to, as opposed to anything that you dispose of has to be transported somewhere and then stored somewhere. And often where we store it is a place where it will maybe break down over time and emit, you know, who knows what amounts of methane and volatile organic chemicals and whatever. And in the meantime, it is, an eyesore and attracts rodents. And, this notion that there's an away is really what needs to change, that you can throw things away as opposed to move things from my problem to somebody else's problem somewhere else.
Yeah. So we're just relocating it. We're not actually throwing it away. Yeah,
because like there is no away.
There is no away. Yeah, that's smart. See there, it's right in our lingo. It's right in what we say. So from your perspective, what kind of things are you excited seeing or hearing people talk about? One thing that caught my attention was just the whole idea around fast fashion and the fact that people are just buying something. They're not even wearing it. Yeah. They order something online. They order three different colors and three different sizes, and then you just pick one, and then the rest becomes waste, because it's convenient to be able to do that. What are you seeing that you're seeing that, again, more mind shift towards being more responsible?
Mm-hmm. I do think there's been a mind shift in the past decade, because if nothing else, there's more awareness about the workers who are making these fast fashion garments and how the only way that they can be sold so cheaply is if people's labor is exploited. Right. So resources are exploited, and then people's labor is exploited, and then the environment is exploited as a way, the place to throw it when we're done with it. So there's exploitation at every point in this process, and there's expropriation of resources, including labor resources and lives that are built into that fast fashion, which make it quite expensive in terms other than dollars. Mm-hmm. And I see young people in particular are paying a lot more attention to that now.
Yeah. And to the natural resources required to make the clothes as well. Mm-hmm. The amount of water it takes to make a pair of jeans.
Yeah.
You're thinking like, wow, if I didn't need to buy those jeans that I never wear and they just sit in my closet or my cupboard, that is a waste of natural resources that we should probably be more better stewards of, I think, as well, right? So as you go out and as you're teaching and speaking and stuff, again, what kind of things are you working on right now? What are some of the things that you're kind of processing and speaking about currently?
So the biggest environmental project I'm working on right now is a project called Renewable Rikers. Rikers Island is the main jail here in New York City, and it's a horrible, terrible place. And it may be taken into federal receivership, maybe even this week, because it's so badly run and so many people have died there. It's a terrible, terrible institution. And by local law, it must close by 2027, which is getting pretty close. And so the question then becomes, what do you do afterwards? And in 2019, or I don't remember, before COVID, we started a campaign. And when I say we, I don't mean me. I mean like a whole coalition of people started a campaign to convert the island into renewable energy generation and storage and wastewater treatment. And then to use that as an opportunity, first of all, to modernize those facilities here in New York, but also to then remove polluting infrastructure from the communities that were most impacted by mass incarceration on Rikers Island, particularly mass incarceration through an unconstitutional stop and frisk program that specifically targeted young Black men. So the idea is that we shut the peaker plants that were all sited in these overburdened communities, the same ones that are overpoliced, and then return that land over to the communities for, you know, parks or social services or whatever makes sense in that community. Same thing with the waste transfer, the wastewater treatment facilities. So it's a really exciting project of significantly reducing the city's carbon footprint and at the same time building a kind of restorative environmental justice into the city's planning processes.
So the that sounds like an amazing project. I didn't realize about Rikers Island, about that coming up. That's quite interesting. I'm going to have to do more research on that myself as well. I'm curious about that.
I encourage you to.
Yeah. One of the questions I know that I've had people ask me about is I've actually had people challenge me on the whole recycling thing, saying that, you know, is it really making an impact? Is it really worth our time and effort? And for me, because of our Upcycle Canada focus, I truly believe it is part of the solution. But the one thing that I hear a lot of people say that is, so if we in Canada decide to be very focused on our climate and focus on doing the best we can, and then our friends to the South, the Americans as well, we focus, we do our best, but other countries do not have the same desire to follow step and to meet these guidelines and to follow these, you know, the policies and things we're setting up for our, where we live. Are we going to be able to make it a big impact globally? And will our attempts be overshadowed by countries that aren't interested in following along?
First of all, there's a tremendous interest around the world, and the United States and Canada are obstructing progress. So the United States and Canada change their ways that will jumpstart what many other countries in the world are trying to do. But even if we go it alone and we are the only ones who switch to renewable energy generation and reduce our consumption, that will have a tremendous impact because we consume so much. So I'm trying to remember the statistics off the top of my head. I don't remember them, but they're staggering how much consumption in North America drives. First of all, it drives extraction around the world of not only fossil fuels, but other resources and a kind of exploitation we were talking about in terms of the environment and workers. But it also is one of the huge chunks of the carbon emissions that are going into the atmosphere. Historically, Canada and the United States have an enormous share of the responsibility, and currently we do as well. So even if we just clean up our own house, that will have a significant impact. Will it solve the entire problem? No. But to say that, it's not worth doing because it's not going to fix everything, really doesn't make any sense. If it makes things better, that's a reason to do it. I just want to add one more thing. Yeah. And of course, it is economically really efficient and desirable. The new technologies that are coming out of the renewable energy industry are cheaper, more efficient, with fewer environmental impacts, but they're also cheaper and more efficient. So they're better if you're looking at it from a bottom line perspective, as well as if you're looking at it from a human health or an environmental perspective.
Yeah. It's kind of like when you have that one neighbor who never takes care of their place and everyone else takes care of their place, and they always make it look nice. But there's just that one neighbor who just never sweeps up or cleans up or mows their yard or takes care of their their gardens. You know, it's like, just because they're not doesn't mean that gives us all permission to not as well. We still need to take care of our own backyards.
Yeah, or why would you want to? Right. I mean, why would you want to say, oh, well, they're a slob, I'll be a slob.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, so that's a good response to that. I like that. So beyond, what little things can we do? I'd like to get some practical things to people listening who are maybe considering this. We have a global audience as well. Mm-hmm. Practical things that we can put into place where we can make a change in our own worlds. What kind of things would come to mind, suggestions from your perspective?
I think the biggest thing you can do to reduce your carbon footprint and your environmental impacts is eat less meat, because particularly less beef. The beef industry is a massive source of carbon emissions, is driving deforestation in many places. And the amount of manure that is produced and needs to be dealt with, that's true for hogs as well, is a huge environmental justice problem, because often it is burdening Black and brown communities that are overwhelmed by this problem. So, I mean, the easiest and thing you can do with the biggest impact is pick one day, if you're a meat eater, pick one day a week and say, we're going to not eat meat on Tuesdays, or maybe not Tuesday if it's Taco Tuesday for you, but like Wednesday, just, you know, one day, see how it goes. And then maybe you'll expand it to 2 days. I personally am a vegetarian. I'm not saying everybody has to be a vegetarian, but thinking about eating in terms of carbon impacts can really make a difference. We were talking just a couple minutes ago about recycling. I just want to remind people that, right, it's reduce, reuse, recycle.
Right.
It's not that you shouldn't recycle, but before you get to questions about recycling, think about, do I need this? Could I, and particularly for things that you're not going to use very often, it's like, could I borrow it from somebody else?
Yeah.
Here in New York City, I live in a high-rise co-op building, and we have a thriving exchange group. We like to joke that we keep our stuff in everybody else's apartment. So, you know, there's no reason for everybody to have a drill or a sewing machine or, whatever the thing is, because you're not going to use, like, it's not something you use every day all the time, unless it happens to be part of your job. So, you know, you can share it. Lots of people could all use one. We pass stuff around all the time. When people have kids, I mean, people practically mug them to give them stuff. Here, you know, have all this stuff. Don't buy any of it. Here, use mine and then pass it on to somebody else. We've lost that sense that we as a community can communally share things, share resources, share clothes. Every year we have your kid's now this age, so here's the net, you know.
Yeah.
I'm looking for school uniforms in size 4, and I've got school uniforms in size 3 to give away, and stuff just gets exchanged.
Yeah. And then I love the rise of like repair cafes, where you can bring something in and it can be fixed instead of just throwing it away and buying another one. There are people who can help you bring that thing back to life and make it reusable again. You know, I love that.
Yeah. And there's, of course, upcycling, which I love. I mean, I love I'm really into like taking things that would otherwise be trash and turning them into something useful. Back to that same community network. I'm always sending out emails saying, so can we have your trash? Right now we're looking for clear glass bottles, or we're looking for, you know, junk food wrappers, or whatever it is to make whatever it is that we're making.
Yeah. And you shared with me some ideas that you've been doing yourself around the glass bottles, for example. Can you explain what you did with that?
Yeah. So I have this, this love of turning glass jars and bottles into goblets and glasses. It's really easy to do. I'm not particularly handy. This is really easy. Anybody can do this. Mm-hmm. All you need is a diamond knife to etch the glass with. I bought a thing from, or maybe I got it from a friend, I don't remember, but it's like a little contraption. Put the bottle on it and roll it, and the diamond knife cuts it. And then you just use hot and cold water to separate the pieces, stand it down and you've got a goblet on one hand and a glass on the other hand, you know, from the two pieces, if it's a bottle. And it makes great gifts. One of the problems with making things is then you have a lot of stuff. So I'm always looking for ways to give away glasses to people. But I wrote a book that we'll talk about another time. Yeah. And at the book launch party, I didn't want to have any plastic. So I made a bunch of glasses. It was a great excuse to make a bunch of glasses. And so it was, you know, come to the book launch party and leave with a glass. And I etched the name. I used a little acid to etch the name of the book onto the glass. So they were personalized and they're a nice souvenir.
See, right there. That's a great way to do that. I love that. The one thing I love about upcycling is people will bring to us stuff that has sentimental value. So we had two Christmases ago, we had a family come to us with a organ that was belonged to a relative of the long past, but that organ had been in their home for years and years and years. Adult children have now grown up and that thing had been in the home all the time. They were children and they wanted us, they had taken it all apart because the person was moving. And they asked us to make things for the family from the organ.
Oh, that's
so
really cool.
Shelves, all kinds of different things. And they wanted, like, this is going to go to this person and this is going to go to that person. One of them had, there was a big scratch on one of the sides of the organ. So, like, can you make this for so-and-so? They, when they were small, they made that scratch. So we want them to have this
piece. So they're
piece.
Keeping the scratch.
You're going to remember that scratch. You know, so we made them something just for them. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of unique to be able to take something that has no longer has purpose or can't be used the way it was created for, and then just giving it to them in new ways so they can all have a little piece of that.
That's fantastic.
I love that. I love seeing that kind of stuff. Being creative, coming up with a solution instead of just having this thing you have to deal with.
Yeah.
And instead of just throwing it in the trash or throwing it away. Like you said, like, it's not a destination. Just giving us people some ideas about how they can repurpose that. And again, just extend the length of the lifetime of that thing, right?
Yeah, well, my kid got really into upcycling for a while. And we did a couple of interesting things. One of them was, again, send out an email. Hey, can we have your trash? And we asked for cereal boxes. And because we don't really eat cereal, but we got the boxes and we turned the cardboard of the cereal box into the front and back for notebooks. And then we scrounged recycled paper. At my university, people are always throwing away paper. So we, first of all, any paper that was mostly still good, I took. And then a lot of other paper that was just wasted. I took, and some of it we made recycled paper and some of it we just cut and used as the pages in the notebooks and bound the end. And you could do it two ways. Either you could have the cereal box for kids who, you know, it's really great for little kids who like love their cereal and now they can have a notebook with their cereal on it.
Yeah.
If you're not into branding, the other thing we did is we took chalkboard paint and painted the front and back covers, and now you had a tablet that you know, could be personalized. And so my kid's an artist, so they drew on some of them, but some of them we just either sold or gave to people blank and gave them a piece of chalk and said, you know, draw on it, it's yours to do with what you want. This was a little business my kid had. They were like, they went through this entrepreneurial phase when they were about 10 or 11 where they're like, I want to make money. And I was like, okay, but we're not doing anything that adds to waste in the world. It has to be something that is a net positive.
Smart.
So they made these notebooks, which were very popular. And then also out of junk food wrappers, they were turning them into pencil and pen cases and change purses. So like a Doritos bag, if you cut the seal part off and then you can either glue or sew a little bit of cloth on, and we had all bits kinds of waste cloth around from clothing that, you know, had gotten ripped in some fashion, and then add a zipper and it's a really cool change purse. And you can either do the silver side if you don't want the logo, or, you know, kids really liked the logo thing. They thought it was really fun.
We have, close to where we live, we have a horse rescue farm, and they buy big, big bags of horse food, and they come in really stiff bags that are really like they're single use after you pour the food out. But what they do is they actually take the bags and remake them into repurposed shopping bags with handles. So when you go to your local store, you have these really strong, sturdy bags that you can throw cans in and stuff when you go shopping.
Same principle, right? But the 11-year-old version.
Yeah.
And actually, one sort of adding to that story, one of my favorite aspects of that is after a little while, the kid decided that they weren't so entrepreneurial and they didn't really want to be selling these things anymore. So they were just giving them away. And then there was a local group of kids that was organizing to raise money to pay bail for people who were arrested at the U.S. southern border, who, if they could pay their bail, could be released because they had family in the United States. And they actually, and so the kid like donated all of the notebooks they'd made and all of the little pouches and pencil cases they made. And they set up an online website to sell these to people as to raise money. And they actually wound up bailing somebody out and reuniting him with his family. Wow. It was incredible.
See? That's great on so many levels.
Yeah.
I love that.
It was, I'm trying to remember how old he was, maybe 12 or 13, but there was a video of him being reunited with his family, and my kids started crying. He's like, wow, this is the most important thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, this is the most important thing you've ever done.
Yeah. And that's going to stay with them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
To know that they had that kind of impact. See? So that's anyone can do this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And they did it while diverting trash out of landfills. I mean, it was just win-win-win on so many levels.
Smart. It's smart. We did allude to your book. I would still love to tell everybody about your book. That'd be great. We're going to come back to Living the Next Chapter podcast, and we're going to talk in more detail. Mm-hmm. But talk about your book as well. It'd be great.
Sure, I'm happy to. Yeah. It's called Naming Gotham, The Villains, Rogues, and Heroes Behind New York Place Names. Mm. And what it is it's a history of New York City that uses the names we give our roads, bridges, and civic institutions as a sort of fun and accessible way into learning about the history of the city. Mm. So, for example, the road that goes by Yankee Stadium that you take if you're going to the George Washington Bridge is called the Major Deegan Expressway. And everybody takes it, but nobody has a clue who the guy was. So, I wrote a chapter about who was Major Deegan. And turns out he's actually not as interesting as you might expect, given that the road that goes past Yankee Stadium is named after him. And so who was Shea? The Mets used to play in Shea Stadium before it was knocked down and replaced by Citi Field. Right now, the U.S. Open is happening at the Billie Jean King Tennis Stadium. So who's she? She, you don't say was, because she's still alive. She's the only one in the book who's still alive. Mm. But who's Billie Jean King? Who's Shirley Chisholm, who was the newest park in New York? The newest state park was named after Shirley Chisholm, who was the first Black woman to serve in Congress. They're just such interesting people, and learning about their lives teaches you about U.S. history and about New York history in a way that is, I hope, fun. Like, it's not, well, now we're going to learn history. It's, hey, let's learn about this person and their foibles, and in the process, get a sense for the era in which they lived and what the world was like.
What sparked the idea to write that book?
I get stuck in traffic a lot. It actually started with Major Deegan, which is why I used him as an example. I used to have to drive on that road to visit my parents in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And can I just say, there is no way to get to my parents' house in public transportation from New York, and it drives me crazy. So the only way to get there is to drive.
Hmm.
But anybody who's driven on the Major Deegan knows that driving is something in quotes. What you're really doing is sitting in traffic. And so I used to just curse him. I was like, I hate this guy. Who was he? And finally, my husband got sick of hearing me say that. He's like, well, why don't you find out? So I did.
Yeah.
And eventually it turned into the book.
There you go. It's kind of like a parking lot with random movement. Yeah. Yeah. I love it. That sounds great. I love history. So you got me there. And I love New York. So that's a great combo. So I'm going to have to get a copy of that. That's amazing. Is the book out now or is it coming out?
Yeah. It came out this spring.
Okay.
And it is, I like to say, available wherever books are sold.
Fine books are sold. Fine.
Oh,
fine,
yes. Books. Well, it's also sold where mediocre books are sold. So, and, you know, if your library might have it as well. And if not, they probably could get it for you.
So is this a book that we should own or we should borrow? I see what I did there.
You know, to be honest, I really just want people to read it.
Good.
So, you know, if you buy it, that's great. If you get it from your library, that's fantastic too.
Awesome.
I just want people to read it.
And
there's also an e-version if you want to read it without paper, without killing any trees.
There you go. And wherever you buy it or read it, make sure you leave a review for the book as well. That's easy
to
do.
That would be lovely.
It's environmentally friendly.
And I discovered those are very important.
Yes. And it won't have any impact on the environment, but it'll make it'll make Rebecca's day for sure. So you need to do that. So, but we're going to have you back on Living the Next Chapter to go in more detail on that. I'm super excited about that. Again, before we go, I just thank you for making time for me again. Like going through all the stuff I saw and watched online, I'll put some links in the show notes, some of the talks that you've given and stuff. There's just a lot of great information that I feel like we just kind of just sort of touched on with our time today, but I just your closing thoughts again on how we can do better, do more, do our part. I love the fact that we don't throw things away. That's going to stick with me now all day. Now I love that. But what can we leave people on so that all of us can make a big change with little actions?
Yeah. Well, what I would say is there are two ways to think about this. One is, what can I do personally in my life? Yeah. And that definitely matters. It really does. But also think about, how can I, as a citizen, affect what happens in my community, in my local community, my state or provincial community, and my state and my nation? So, you know, the biggest thing you can do is vote for people who care about these issues, who care about families, who care about the future and care about the environment. And then we'll see big change on a systemic level. And you can buttress that with change on an individual level.
I like it. And one thing I'm really excited and encouraged about is it seems like our children are having a greater impact on us towards being more eco-friendly. They're coming home with this and they're setting the example for the older generation because we're not used to thinking in this way and they are. So we have a lot to learn from the generation that's younger than us and letting them lead us.
And I agree.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to kind of frame that and think of that and listen to your family, listen to your kids. They have got some amazing ideas.
And kids care about justice.
Yes.
They care about fairness. They care about the environment. They care. You know, they're not cynical yet. And they can be, the inspiration, but also, I agree, they can be the leaders. Youth voices really matter.
Excellent. So get out there, make a difference. Just because someone else isn't taking care of their yard doesn't give you permission to not take care of yours. Take care and do your best. And again, find great, smart people in this world like Rebecca, and you will find some great inspiration. Thank you so much for making time to be on the podcast.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. So
how do we connect with you? Where do we go? How do we find you and do all that stuff?
Well, I have a website, RebeccaBratsbys.com. You can find out about me, about my scholarship, about the book, about something we didn't mention, which is the environmental justice comic books that I make with an artist collaborator. They are free for download. They can be freely downloaded for any educational or nonprofit purpose, and they're really cool. I highly recommend you check them out.
Definitely.
I am R. Bratsbys on pretty much every kind of social media there is, so yeah, I would love to connect with people.
And within the New York area or Pennsylvania, depending on car, if you're looking for a great speaker to come in and speak to your organization or maybe your students about this, reach out,
yeah.
right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I do a lot of guest visits here in New York City in public schools. I'm delighted to talk with community groups and book clubs and, you know, congregations and whoever wants to talk.
Excellent. You're a great resource for everyone. We need you in Canada, but that's quite a we don't transit system from New York to Canada yet either. So
well, there's a good train to Montreal.
There you go. That's right. So, check out Rebecca's stuff. We'll have all the links in the show notes. And again, thank you for making time for a great conversation. Glad to have you here.
Oh, it was a pleasure. It really was. Awesome. Thanks.
This has been the Upcycle Canada podcast. Thanks for listening today. We appreciate your feedback and would love to connect with you. Email your questions, comments, or suggestions to upcyclecanadapodcast@gmail.com. To find out more about our business and access links to all our social media sites, podcast notes, and more, please visit upcyclecanada.ca. A review of this episode on the podcast app of your choice is always appreciated. Please help us build this community by sharing our podcast with your family and friends. Our thanks to Jacob Moon for the instrumental backing track used in this podcast. Please visit jacobmoon.com for more on this talented Canadian artist. Join us again for more great topics, ideas, and practical steps to help you in your daily life. Thank you for listening. Let's keep this conversation going.
Hey, this is Dave. You're like, what's this music? I thought the podcast was over. Well, it is. This is actually an ad. Oh, you're like an ad. But this is different. This is for another podcast called, ready? Dad Space. Dad Space is a podcast created for dads by dads. Head over to dadspace.ca for all the information. And we would love, if you know a dad, if you are a dad, if you've ever had a dad, if you know a new dad, a current dad, an empty nest dad, we have a podcast just for dads. And I'd love to share it with you and to share it with a special dad in your life. dadspace.ca. Thank you for listening to the podcast you've already been listening to. But if you want a little bit more podcasting greatness, check out dadspace.ca, dadspace.ca, for all the goodness for your favorite dad. Aw, it's like a Father's Day present every day. We'll see you over at dadspace.ca. Thanks for listening to all of our podcasts, and we'll talk soon. This is Dave, and I'll meet you at dadspace.ca. Cheers. And now we dance.